Your Fears Don't Care. It's episode 11, season 2020, The Power of Others podcast. Hey, welcome inside the Yellow Studio. My name is Randy Cantrell. I am your host here. The website is growgreat.com. Thepowerofothers.com. That'll get you there as well. Ralph Waldo Emerson wrote, "When a resolute young fellow steps up to the great bully, the world, and takes him boldly by the beard, he is often surprised to find it comes off in his hand, and that it was only tied on to scare away the timid adventurers." I hope you'll visit the website, growgreat.com. You'll find all kinds of previous episodes, big archive, lots of resources over there, hopefully to help you grow great. The Power of Others is about helping leaders make better decisions faster, but really the bigger thing is to help people leverage the power of others. Today's episode, episode 11, is brought to you by the Peer Advantage. I'm forming a charter group. Charter Peer Advantage Group. This is an online exclusive mastermind group, if you please, for small to medium-sized business owners, and you can find out all the details by visiting thepeeradvantage.com. All right, let's talk about fears. Age and experience have taught me that fear is ever present. You don't ever conquer it because, well, it changes with time. Never goes away. Fear is this constant in our lives. Bravery, well, bravery ebbs and flows. The ironic thing about bravery is that without fear, there is no bravery. So, well, if you'd like to be brave, you have to acknowledge and recognize fear. I get tickled every time somebody says, "Oh, I don't have any fear." Well, if you don't have any fear, then you have no bravery, because that's just how it goes. Fears don't care what you do. Be brave, be cowardly, doesn't matter. Fears don't really care either way. Don't let your fears win. Boy, we hear that advice, that admonition is given to us over and over and over. But here's the thing. Fears are not motivated to win or lose. Fears have no expectation because fears are mostly irrational. Well, the ones that really stymie us seem to be that way. Aristotle wrote, "Fear is pain arising from the anticipation of evil." Now, maybe I ought to more precisely define fear, at least the way I'm using fear for today's episode. I very much like the acronym FEAR as false evidence appearing real. And that makes my usage of the word very different than those real challenges that you face. For instance, an annual medical checkup could reveal some serious health concern. Your doctor sits down with you, lays out this diagnosis, lays out this course of treatment. Yes, of course, you're afraid. But your fear is based on real evidence of something that is very real. You didn't know this before. Now you are faced with this very real evidence. This is not false evidence. Your fear is the fear of the unknown. That's understandable. You've never been here before. You've never experienced this before. It takes the human mind some time to adapt and adjust to that news. This is why your knees buckle at the news. And yet within days, well, you're back on your feet and you've now got greater resolve that you're going to battle through. You're going to do whatever you are able to do to improve your condition. You're going to hope that you can improve your condition. But this doesn't happen immediately. That doesn't happen while you're sitting there in front of the doctor getting this news. The processing of the news takes time. Real fear, real issues. Nothing fake, nothing false happening here. Now, maybe it's splitting hairs, but I hope you see the difference. And I hope that you're not having to endure something like that, sitting down with a doctor and getting this bad diagnosis, but I suspect some of you are. Some of you are battling through some bad news like that, some very real bad news. that you simply must face as best you can. Some bad news that can require you to just simply do your best in whatever decisions lay ahead. Ralph Waldo Emerson wrote, "Fear defeats more people than any other one thing in the world." And I think Ralph was right. I don't believe that life is merely filled with imaginary monsters, imaginary boogeymen. There are some very real monsters out there. I also believe terror is real, and that terror is fueled by our panic and our fear. For instance, as I hit the record button today, here we are in March of 2020, the coronavirus is very real. It's not imaginary. However, the panic and the fear partly are imaginary, because as I record this, there are about 84,000 cases of this thing worldwide. There are almost 2,900 deaths. Almost 37,000 have recovered. And in the U.S., there are 60 reported cases. 60. I have a buddy who was scheduled to travel from Dallas to Nashville this week to a conference. And last week he texted me and he said the conference got canceled due to fear of this spreading virus. Now, I know a seminar company that has already capitalized on this fear, because they are now selling a high-end seminar to organizations who are panicked about what are we going to do if this virus strikes our organization. And so there's a company already selling, promoting, and in some cases advertising where they've been hired to conduct this seminar. Fear. Fear and the virus, they're both real. The level of fear is amplified, though, because, well, we imagine that this thing is far worse in scope and scale. In our minds, it's like this worldwide plague that's spreading faster than we can even identify it. That simply is not true. What is true is we have questions about this thing. I mean, there are many things about this thing that we don't know, and it's those unknowns that make us more afraid than we might otherwise be. Well, that's how fear works. The less we know, the greater our fear. I mean, just look at the stock market. The stock market is reacting to the coronavirus. The stock market is proof that fear and panic and terror work. Almost 3,300 people die every single day worldwide in traffic accidents. It's going to eclipse 1.25 million people this year who will die globally in traffic accidents. And yet we're still going to buy 74 million automobiles in the year 2020. We're not afraid of driving our cars. We're not afraid of cars. We are comfortable with cars. You know why? Well, we understand cars. We've been around cars a long, long time. We've been driving cars and riding in cars all of our lives. What you don't know can hurt you. We hear that. We believe that, even though it's not necessarily true. I mean, think about it. What you don't know can hurt you. Think about that, and it fails to even make sense in so many regards. I know about the dangers of smoking. I know about cancer. I know about heart disease. I know about gun accidents. I know about drinking and driving. I mean, there are many, many dangers that I am completely aware of. They are still very dangerous. My knowledge about them doesn't make them any less dangerous, except in the sense that I can be on guard and I can alter my behavior and my decisions to avoid those things as much as possible. But simply knowing, well, that doesn't protect me either. Dawson Church wrote in a book, Mind to Matter, "It ain't what you don't know that gets you into trouble. It's what you know for sure that just ain't so." And boy, is that true. Because here's the fact. What you don't know can scare you half to death. Let's talk about talking and listening our way toward the truth. I'm sitting in the car. I got one of the grandsons in the car. We are having a perfectly fine conversation when suddenly, out of the blue, he gets very solemn and very quiet. And I notice he's beginning to cry, just slightly. He's not weeping. He's just, I can see a tear roll down. And I ask him, "What's wrong? What are you feeling? No answer. Now, he's young, and command of emotions is not easy. In fact, I would argue it's not even possible for a child. And we're talking, and we weren't talking about anything that in my mind would have even remotely prompted this kind of a reaction. Nothing I could recognize. And for the next few minutes, I'm sitting here and I am assuring him that if he wants to tell me what he's feeling, if he wants to tell me what he's sad about, that I'm safe. He can do this with me. And I talk to him about people with whom he can be safe. And I urge him to make sure that he can talk with somebody, even if it's not me. Now, again, he's young. He's very young. And we're going to keep helping him understand that the path forward is going to be much, much easier if he will talk and listen his way toward the truth, whatever that may be and whatever context that may be. I have no idea what he was feeling. I have no idea what prompted the tears. Over time, he will learn that helping people understand those kinds of things can help him, provided that these are people that he confides in because he feels safe with them, which I told him means they won't ever use what you tell them against you. Enough business owners and CEOs and leaders have sat down with me over the course of time, and during our conversation, almost universally, they will make an admission, a confession, and they will tell me, this feels like therapy. This feels like therapy. I hear this comment over and over and over and over again. And it happens during many first-time meetings. Well, years ago, I was puzzled by this. I was really puzzled by this. But I've come to understand the reality. And here's the reality. People, all people, crave being heard and being understood. We all want and we all need other people who will listen to us and work to understand us. People need to be understood by somebody. Even those folks, you know, who seem to thrive on being mysterious. Now, they have a yearning to be understood by somebody. It's universal. I speak with a CEO on the phone for the very first time. We've never met. And within minutes, I ask about challenges and problems and hurdles. It is extremely rare for me. It's less than 1%. Easily. It's extremely rare for me to face resistance to that inquiry. These top-level leaders, I don't care if they're running a billion-dollar company, I don't care if they're running a $3 million company, these top-level leaders are so hungry for somebody with whom they can feel safe, somebody they feel will not use what they say against them, and they begin to talk about their biggest problems and their biggest concerns, and their fears. Well, it's my superpower. Active listening and asking good questions. Those are my superpowers. I don't have very many, so you can't rob me of the few that I've got. I have witnessed how meaningful talking and listening our way toward the truth can be. And I've also seen how hard that can be for most people. For some, like my grandson, they just simply can't do it. They just can't find the words. They physically are unable to speak. I have family members who are wired that way, so I have come to understand it. Sure, it begins in their head, but they just can't bring themselves to speak. Not at that moment. Some can talk later, but not at that moment. And some can listen later, but not at that moment. This took me a long time to understand that this is how people physically can react because, well, I'm not like that at all. I can readily and easily summon the verbiage that's necessary to help you understand, to help you know what I'm thinking, what I'm feeling, and why I'm thinking and why I'm feeling that way. For me, it's less about my ability to talk and my ability to listen. It is more about my selectivity in who I want to listen to and who I want to listen to me. Here's why this is important stuff. Your fears don't care. Your fears do not care. But somewhere there are people who do. And there are people who will care. And that's going to make all the difference in the world in your ability to effectively overcome your fears. I know so many people, really high-end accomplished people, who will admit that they may have gone through a period of time, perhaps years and years of really struggling, trying to just go it alone. And something happened and they realized this is not working. This is stupid. And the minute that they began to lean on some other people, they realized it made all the difference in the world. And that's kind of the point here. Eleanor Roosevelt said, "You gain strength, courage, and confidence by every experience in which you really stop to look fear in the face. You must do the thing which you think you cannot do." Well, that's great, Eleanor, but how? And as much as I'd love to agree with her first statement, her first sentence, "You gain strength, courage, and confidence by every experience in which you really stop to look fear in the face," I can't agree with that. It's not true. It sounds terrific, but there are times that you have looked fear in the face, and there have been times where you really did stop and you looked fear in the face, and sometimes you looked at it for a split second, and then you ran like a wild hyena the other way. Well, I've done that too. There's no strength gained there. There's no courage. There's no confidence that's increased. There's just sheer panic. We really stop and we look fear in the face and we get even more afraid. That's a reality. There have been other times when you have looked fear in the face and you didn't run away. But it still kicked you to the ground and it still just stomped all over you. Going through something does not necessarily improve us, because that's just mostly the passive act of endurance. It's not quite the same thing as enduring fear with a purpose or an intent to conquer it. Conquering, that is a lot tougher task than enduring. Okay, but is it? Is it really? I've talked in the past a little bit about buffalo versus cattle in a thunderstorm. The cattle run away from the storm and buffalo run into the storm, and the obvious is, well, the buffalo are in the storm the shortest amount of time. And so you could argue, well, even though they endured the storm, they endured it for a briefer period of time. And isn't that easier? Isn't that better than enduring, which could last, well, who knows how long? So in that regard, yes, conquering is way better than enduring. Doing that thing that you think you cannot, as Eleanor wrote, you must do the thing which you think you cannot do. Yes, agreed. But I have to emphasize the things you think you can't do. My little grandson doesn't yet know how to express what he's feeling when he's embarrassed or when he's upset. I'm hoping to help him figure that out as he grows up. He's convinced he can't tell me what he's feeling. Not right then, not right there. And you know what? He's right. He's completely right. He can't. But I know a secret that he hasn't yet learned. Nothing is stopping him. It's all in his head. Emotionally, he struggles, and those emotions paralyze him physically from talking about it. It's not fake. It's real. That's the power of fear. But as a family, we owe it to him to help him learn that he has a bigger power, a power that can conquer that fear. He can decide for himself what he wants, and he can be freed from that specific fear. My hope is that by learning how to conquer that fear, he'll better understand his ability to overcome, well, just about any fear. Doesn't mean that he'll never be afraid. He's going to be like you. He's going to be like me. He's always going to be afraid of something. But it means he'll feel powerful enough to look fear in the face and conquer fear. The good news is your fears don't care. They come, they go. You embrace them and you hold on to them. You let them go, you conquer them. They just don't care because, well, that's just how they are. Here's what I hope to help you with: conquering your fears. You are in control of the fears. And I know it doesn't feel that way, but it is completely true. And I'm not downplaying your fear. I'm not minimizing your fear. I'm not saying that they aren't real. I'm not even going to say that they are completely unwarranted. I don't know. Here's what I do know. Your fears can spur you onto growth and improvement, or they can freeze you right where you stand or right where you sit. Let me give you just a few key points that I have learned in facing my own fears and in helping other people face theirs. Giving fear more time helps fear grow. Mark it down. Giving fear more time helps fear grow. Every time we dwell on our fears, they expand. They always expand. Whatever time, whatever space you are willing to give fear, fear's going to take it. Take it all. And then some. The key to first managing fears is more effectively to restrict time and space. So that's the first thing that you got to do. Next, look closely into the details of your fears. Now, the way to reduce the time and the space is to closely examine the fear. When you look closely at the coronavirus, you begin to quickly see that the hysteria isn't appropriate. The hysteria is very disproportionate. Well, it's likely that way with many or most of your fears. Let me give you one fear that I've always had: imposing on people. I hate imposing on people. And that fear is manifested in my reluctance to sell me, reluctance to contact prospects who may desperately need my help. And upon close examination, that fear is completely unfounded. It's completely unfounded. Do you experience impositions? Of course, you experience impositions every single day of your life. But what may be an imposition to some is going to be an opportunity for others. You don't see every interaction as an imposition because there are some interactions with you that, while they could be imposing in that you weren't expecting the call, you weren't expecting the contact, some of those happen and they're quite serendipitous in that you're pleased about it. Well, if you're pleased about it, it's not an imposition. That's the truth of it. My fears are ridiculous, and my fears are without foundation. Besides, if I'm imposing on somebody, don't you suppose that they're quickly going to blow me off? And who among us hasn't been blown off? You've blown off people already today, and you're going to blow off more people later today, and so am I. But we're still here in spite of all the times that people have said no to us, or in spite of the times that people have ignored us. If I don't dwell at all, the LinkedIn connections, just take LinkedIn connections. People will connect with me on LinkedIn, and no sooner do I hit agree or whatever it is that you hit at LinkedIn, which it escapes me, but okay, yeah, I'll approve it. And the very next message is an automated sales pitch. Okay, an imposition. Well, not really, because I don't have to read it. In fact, I'll tell you, I don't read it. I don't read it. And I just go, yeah, okay, I see what they're after. And it's fine. I'm not keeping a tally of these people. I'm not keeping some spreadsheet. I'm not thinking any less of these people. Right? I mean, there aren't any consequences to this. There are no consequences to my fears. Whenever I ask what's the worst thing that can happen, here's the answer. The same thing that would happen if I never made the effort. The outcome is going to be identical. I'm not going to get any business. Okay, so next, act fast. Ralph Waldo Emerson wrote, and I love this, in skating over thin ice, our safety is in our speed. And boy, is that right. The faster you get to the details, the better. The slower, the worse it gets, the worse fear gets. Remember, fears thrive on misinformation and time. And add those together, well, and you got panic. You got big, big fear. You got terror. So you have to dive into uncovering the real source of the fears. And there are a few things that can help. Number one, don't get too far ahead of yourself. Last week, we talked about making something so easy you can't resist doing it. Go back and listen to that episode if you didn't. Figure out one little step, just one little step that you can take toward overcoming the fear, conquering the fear, just one. Now, here's what's going to happen to you. You're going to be tempted to think that you're not doing the right thing because your self-talk is going to kick in and you're going to start berating yourself especially if you're a high achiever, you're going to berate yourself, I'm not doing enough. I mean, this one little thing, really? I mean, that's not going to be enough. I'm going to have to do something bigger than that. No, no, you don't. That's fear just holding on, because even though fears don't care, well, fears, here's what they do care about. They just want to be alive as long as possible. So they're going to do what the human body, they're going to cling on to life as long as they can. And as long as you're willing to give them any air, any oxygen, any time, any space at all, they're going to cling on to that. So job one is to suffocate fear so that fear can die more quickly. I mean, think of a mercy killing, right? We want to mercy kill our fear. Secondly, make sure to accurately identify the fear, because it may not be what you say. It may not even be what you think it is. My fear of prospecting is not so much the fear. My fear, I say, is imposing on people, but really, if I boil it down even further, that really isn't my fear. My real fear is what people might think of me imposing on them. There's the real fear. I mean, they may think less of me. Well, the truth is, the people that I prospect aren't thinking of me at all. I'm not even on their radar. And then when I get on their radar by reaching out to them, I could be fearful. Yeah, I mean, what are they going to think about me? A closer examination can reveal how foolish I'm being with this fear, though. If they rebuff me, if they don't answer an email, if they don't answer a message, if they don't take a phone call, well, they just move on with their life. And guess what I do? I do the same thing. If I'm smart, I move on with mine too. No harm, no foul. But if they engage, well, if they engage, then I have an opportunity to get to know them better, and they have an opportunity to get to know me better. Well, that's a win. Quite frankly, both are a win, right? Third, take action. Take action right now. Do not delay. Do not talk yourself out of starting. Procrastination gives time and space to fear. And remember, time and space, these are the components that fear needs to thrive. Lastly, it's never over. No, it's never over. You can conquer fear, but remember, fear doesn't care. Fear can come back, and fear will come back. And that's okay. It's perfectly okay. Fear will obey your commands. You need to learn to command fear to go away, and it will. Oh, sure. It's like a disobedient pet. It'll come back. Just okay. Command fear to stay away, and it will. Command fear to stay put and stay right here in your life, and it will. Your battles with your fear, well, these battles, it's a battle that you can begin. It's good news, bad news kind of a thing. You can begin the battle right now. I mean, right this very instant, you can begin the battle. The bad news is you can't stop. You're never going to be able to stop fighting the fight. And so it's just best for you to take on this role of a warrior. Be a warrior against your fears, and be willing to be this warrior for the rest of your life, because that's what it's going to take. Make up your mind to give every fear that you have a fight. The good news is you can win. You can win each one of these fights. Nothing, absolutely nothing, prevents you from winning every single battle. The only question is whether or not you are going to figure out how to fight effectively. I'm glad you clicked play. I hope you're a subscriber to the podcast. Let me make one more hawk, since I've already kind of told you. I have a little bit of call reluctance. I have a lot of call reluctance, to tell you the truth. The peer advantage. I am forming a charter group of just eight, count them, eight, small to medium-sized business owners from around America to join me few times a month online using a video conferencing platform so that we can tackle these and other issues, all the issues that face us in life. It's aimed for small to medium-sized business owners to hit the trifecta of business building: getting new customers, serving existing customers better, and not going crazy in the process. And boy, is that last one a biggie. All the details are found at thepeeradvantage.com. I hope you'll click that apply now button and let's have a conversation. My name is Randy Cantrell. The website is growgreat.com. Be well, do good, grow great. And Lord willing, I will see you next week.